Welcome to the Grapevine Open Meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm Kimberly, and I'm an alcoholic. I'll be your host for the month of August. This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is the desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. You can enjoy the Grapevine open meetings every Wednesday at noon Eastern Time on this virtual platform. The meeting will be recorded and will be posted as an audio podcast every Friday on all podcast platforms on aagrapevine.org and on YouTube. This is an open meeting. Everyone is welcome. We are glad you are all here, especially newcomers. If you are new to AA and want to learn more about our program of recovery from alcoholism, we encourage you to find an AA group in your area. Contact with group members will help you to find a sponsor and help you learn about the AA program of recovery from alcoholism. I'm going to read today's Grapevine quote. The Grapevine Daily quote. August 12th, the beginning of maturing for me was becoming willing to try to face the realities of my own life a day at a time and letting go of my childhood fantasies of living happily ever after in a perfect world made up of perfect people. New York, New York, April 1980, from Toward Reality, Spiritual Experience, with Spiritual Awakenings. You can sign up to receive the daily quote as a daily email at aagrapevine.org, or you will find it on the Grapevine app every morning. This is an excerpt from the Grapevine magazine. I don't know why I walked through the doors of AA when I did. I describe my arrival as the point when I had just enough of myself left. Just enough spirit or soul or humanity left to pull me away from alcohol for an hour. I didn't intend to stop drinking. I didn't intend to change everything about my life. I just needed 1 hour of freedom. Now here's where the 12th tradition took hold. During that hour, someone said something so honest that I actually knew that he and I had been in the same hellhole. Who that was, what he said, I can't now remember, and it doesn't matter. I don't remember much of those first months, but I do remember that the unvarnished authenticity of people fighting hard to crawl out of alcohol's death grip hit me in the heart. I do remember that I never knew where the next true lesson was going to come from. What I heard was the human spirit struggling to be free, and it made no difference who brought that honesty to the room. Not last names, not titles, not professions, not diplomas, not bank accounts, not affiliations, not nationality, not ethnicity, not size, not gender, not color, none of that mattered or even registered with me. Truth was the truth. And it had power. Here's a reading from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Page 124. Henry Ford once made a wise remark to the effect that experience is the thing of supreme value in life. That is true only if one is willing to turn the past to good account. We grow by our willingness to face and rectify errors and convert them into assets. The alcoholic's past thus becomes the principal asset of the family and frequently It is almost the only one. This painful past may be of infinite value to other families still struggling with their problem. We think each family which has been relieved owes something to those who have not. And when the occasion requires, each member of it should be only too willing to bring former mistakes, no matter how grievous, out of their hiding places. Showing others who suffer how we were given help is the very thing that which makes life seem so worthwhile to us now. Cling to the thought that in God's hands, the dark past is the greatest possession you have, the key to life and happiness for others. With it, you can avert death and misery for them. This will be a two-speaker meeting. There'll be no sharing by attendees. So please sit back, relax, and listen. We often hear it is best to try and identify with the speakers rather than compare your stories with theirs. My first speaker is Gordon from Sobriety First, Huntington, New York. If you could please unmute yourself.
Great. Go ahead. Hi, everyone. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Gordon. And I am very grateful to be here today. A little nervous about speaking, as I usually am, but I will say thank you to Kim for asking me to speak. And what a pleasure and an honor it is to speak for the AA Grapevine. I've been sober a while now, and the Grapevine is just early on in my recovery, it was such a lifeline of between meetings of trying to get a message. And I got sober a long time ago. I was 19 years old. I'm 54 now. And when I was 19, back in 1992, there weren't nearly as many young people as there are now. And I remember always scanning the Grapevine to look for stories of young people. And even back then, they had them. And I always felt so comforted by that. So I love the work that the Grapevine does. So thank you for that and for being there. And I actually got a story published a couple of many years ago as well. So my story is not unique. I am another typical alcoholic, been fortunate enough not to have drank and had a drug in a long time. But I will tell you that it came at a price. It was here. I got to AA. I was 19 years old. I had fractured my family. My parents weren't really speaking to me. I had failed out of one school. Was kind of in another school or college at the time. Everything I did at that point in my life, I always call myself an alcoholic with great intentions. I had the best of intentions, and then something would happen and I would just veer off the road, right? So I often tell the story that in high school, I went to four proms because the first prom I threw up on my date. The second prom, I lost my date. And I kept going back to thinking it's going to be different. But I was at each one of those proms, and each one got worse. So I was definitely the world's worst prom date. And I apologize to them out there. But the idea was my intention was always good. It was always about I'm going to do the right thing. And then I would have a drink. And then I would lose control. And I didn't have any control of what I was going to do or where I was going to end up. So I remember days, and I'm sure, and I've heard this for years in AA, you know, you go out, you know, I was a young kid at the time, 18, 19. I'm going to go out, I'm going to have a couple drinks. I have to work the next day. I was working on the east end of Long Island, landscaping in the heat. And I said, well, I'm just going to go out and have a couple of drinks. I'll be done by 11. And then I'll be able to get up and not be late to work and not smell bad and be useless at work. And we all know the story. I'm going to go home at 11. And I went to 12. And I went to 1. and I went to two. And one of the most vivid memories I have of my drinking was sitting in my car. I had a Jeep at that point at a marina. I was living on a boat at the time. And I was sitting there drinking this. I had converted the back of the trunk into a cooler because that's what seems to be, you need to do that. Finishing a couple of beer in my hand, parked against this shed, and watching this gentleman walking to work with, he had a lunchbox and he had a newspaper under his arm. And he worked at the marina. And I remember looking at this gentleman and thinking, how do you do that? Like, how in the world does someone, make a plan and be prepared for the next day and get a good night's sleep and not just mess up as much as I did all the time? Because my intentions were always great. And I'm trying really hard not to drop an F-bomb because I was told I can't. So I'm not doing that. Just going to be up front with everybody. But that was my story. It was like I didn't know how to function as a regular person. And I was envious and jealous of people who can do it. My friends at the time were, they're going to college and they were moving on with their lives. And I was failing out of colleges and I was going backwards. And I would try, and I do remember my first time going to AA. I was 18. I was in high school. It was God, 1991 or 1990 sometime. And I remember sitting there back there. Back then, we could smoke in the meetings, and I'd sit in the back and smoke, and just look around the room and compare myself to everybody of how different I am. Whether it was I was too young, or I lived over here, or I was big on like, well, I never lost a job. Nobody would hire me, So like, I don't know why I thought no one would lose a job. So I would always do this comparing thing, and it just kept me more and more isolated. Just to speed up a little bit, my bottom took place, and it was really because alcohol just kept kicking me down. I had been sober for about a month. I was going to meetings, and like every good, I love being sarcastic, so please don't misunderstand when I say I was being a good AA person when I would go to meetings and then go out to the bars afterwards. So like that was, not the best most recommendation, but that's what I was doing because my friends were different, and I wasn't as bad as you guys, and I knew what I was doing. And so I would go to meetings and then meet my friends at the bars, and we all know what's going to happen, right? You play, sit in a barbershop long enough, you're going to get a haircut, as I was used to be told. And I did. And when I went out that last time, it was I was just felt beaten. I had been living in my basement apartment in my parents' house. I'll always remember the picture because I had this old reclining chair that was falling apart. I had a tube. Back in the day, there were tube TVs, and the top third of the TV was black. So it would be like, I would be like watching TV like this, just like only like two thirds of the screen. And I had a cooler with ice, a little fridge, and I had. Oh my God, I had SpaghettiOs and a microwave. Like, to think about it now, it's disgusting. But that was like, when all said and done, that's where I wanted to go back to drink. It wasn't social, it wasn't fun. It was, I want to just numb out and escape from the world and hide in this basement. And I did. And that led me to just really, I used to say being suicidal, and it was kind of suicidal, but I would, I also had a tendency of like, when I was really desperate, trying to call people up in the middle of the night, especially ex-girlfriends, and say, poor me. And long story short, I was hopeless, and I did end up in a detox, and I was 19 at the time. And then from that detox, they shipped me off to a rehab in Pennsylvania. And I always share this part of the story because I remember going to these places and thinking, this can't be me. I'm 19. I'm a kid, this can't be me. And all these things that I heard in the rooms of the yets that were out there were starting to happen to me, you know? And the biggest part I remember of waking up in these places was the total, wasn't even humiliation, but it was the hopelessness that I couldn't live a normal life. I didn't know how to function. I couldn't show up at work. I couldn't stay in school. And I felt just so hopeless that I wanted to die. And yet I was too cowardly to do anything about that. And the thing I love about AA and the thing, and I think some of the readings that Kim was reading kind of mentioned to that today was like, I would come here and I got out of rehab and I went to my first meeting and I remember not wanting to share, not wanting to do anything, and people coming up to me, and it was, and I still don't know what they said, like that reading said, but I know what I felt, and I felt they understood. And I can't say it gave me hope, but it gave me the courage to come back the next night and try to see them again. And in my head, you know, my idea was like, I can't stay sober. This is not something I can do. And I remember telling to people like, I'm going to come do this program and I'll show you this thing doesn't work because I'm hopeless. I'm a helpless case. And long story short, I would go to meetings and share my, you know, share and put my hand up. And at the end of the day, you know, I did everything the opposite of what I thought, and I was able to stay sober. And that beginning led to a life beyond my wildest dreams. And I don't mean that in terms of a life without pain. And I don't mean that as a life without hardship, but I mean a life that I haven't had to have a drink since 1992. And I have two daughters who are 23 and 24 who've never seen their father drink. I have met my wife in these rooms. These rooms have, it's my life started the day I came into AA and I didn't know it. And I came in hopeless and helpless and feeling overwhelmed by the world. And just so slowly, you all kind of seeped into my brain. And by being around AA meetings and being around you folks, I would hear hope. And it would slowly keep me coming back to the next meeting. And I always remember going to meetings, feeling powerless, feeling hopeless, always feeling this uncomfortable. And somebody in the meeting would say something, and it would soothe that hole that I was walking around in, that hole that was just like, there's something wrong with me. And when I would share things with people, nobody once flinched and said, "Oh my God, something wrong with you." And more than often, people would be like, "Oh, I feel that way. And I've done that, or I've felt that way. And I know what that thinking is like." And I often talk about sobriety, and I try to make an analogy to the herd, you know, of herd immunity. We talk in the wild, whereas, you know, as I came into AA, I got in this herd of people, and this herd of people kept me very safe. Even when I wanted to leave the herd, they were there calling me and kicking me back to the center of the herd. And, you know, those who leave the herd, you know, they get picked off by the lions and all that stuff, you know. And I was very lucky that I had people every time I wanted to leave that herd, I had sponsors and people who cared about me, who would call me and check on me and keep pulling me back into it. And I still think this wholeheartedly. It's not, I got sober against, despite me, because it wasn't me, because I don't know if I deserve to be sober or anything, but I know that you guys helped me do that. And like I said, it's, you know, it's been an amazing journey. AA has saved my life. AA gave me a life. It gave me my family back. It gave me my wife. It gave me my children. It's given me a career. But most of all, I woke up this morning and I wasn't dreading life. Right. And it's and like and it sounds so simple, but yet I always dreaded life waking up drinking. Always. Every day was like, what are we gonna? I just don't want to, you know, and I have things I look forward to today. And one of the other parts of the reading that Kim was reading is, and I'm a big believer in this, is that this is work, that this is not, you know, I don't really identify where everyone's like, I got sober and everything's great, because it's not. I've had heartache, I've had illness, I've had kids struggle, I've had setbacks in career. I mean, you name it, it's happened to me, but I haven't had to have a drink. And that's what life is. Life is not just feeling peachy all the time. As an alcoholic, I want to feel good all the time. You know, it just give me, let me feel good all the time. And my sponsor told me that's not really how life works. You know, in life, there's a heartbeat. There's ups and downs and ups and downs. And, you know, so grateful that when the ups, I enjoy the ups, and when the downs, I buckle down and I hold on for the downs. And it's work, you know, and it's well worth it. But it is work, you know. I mean, there's part of me that, you know, it's a Wednesday afternoon. I thought about how do I get out of this speaking, you know, but I AA has given me everything, you know, but that's, oh, my instinct still is like, oh, I don't want to do that. You know, I don't want to help somebody else of that. And the more I do the opposite of what Gordon's brain wants to do, the better I get. You know, Gordon is very selfish and self-centered. And the more I help people, and the more I reach out to others, and the more I let people be there for me, you know, the stronger I get. And I think that reverberates through my life. I hope so. You know, I think that the idea of passing the message along is not just what we say, but what we do. And, you know, and I really believe wholeheartedly in that, that what I've been given here in AA is a gift. And anytime we get a gift, I don't care if it's a sobriety or you know, a cup of coffee or whatever it is, you know, we have to take care of that gift, right? And such a big part of recovery for me is maintenance. And it's how do we take care of that? How do I keep trying to find ways to give back? How do I not get complacent and, you know, in my little world? And you know, and I'm just grateful for that. You know, I've been blessed with a lot of opportunities, and I've had a lot of struggles, and I haven't had to drink. And I can't promise anybody who's coming to AA that, listen, you're going to come here, everything's going to be better. I'm not going to promise you that, but you know, not once of any of the things I've been through have would a drink or a drug made it better. So, you know, I always, you know, talk about being in the arena, as I say. Like, I could sit in the sidelines and comment on everything, but I'm in it, and we're sober, and we're doing the best we can today. And I know I that's true for me. So, you know, I'm going to wrap up there. I will say this, and I mean this anyway, for anyone new or hasn't been here, you know, AA is a lifeline, and I love the fact that we can spread that message through the grapevine. I've been fortunate enough to been in other countries and been to meetings. I'm always so amazed by, like, I get so complacent in my little world of AA, but then I step out of it and I go to a meeting somewhere else, and I'm like, oh my God, how powerful is this, you know? And I feel so blessed to be a part of it. So, with that, I want to thank everybody for keeping me sober. Hope you could get something out of what I shared today. And again, I'm an alcoholic. My name is Gordon.
Thank you so much, Gordon. That was an amazing share. You know, there was a lot of identification there. You know, you mentioned that you came at a price. And I, you know, I identified with that statement. And the other statement that you also stated was the fractured family. And I identified with that as well. And I randomly picked the reading right before this, and a lot of your share kind of spoke to that, and your experience spoke to that. You know, you have the gifts, but you know, life still happened as well. So I appreciate that. So I have a few announcements. The seventh tradition of AA states that every AA group should be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. AA members can help by contributing to your group, your local office, your area and district, and to the General Service Board. There's a great pamphlet called Self-Support, Where Money and Spirituality Mix. You can find it on AA.org. Grapevine does not accept direct contributions, but of course, we do have expenses. The best way to support Grapevine is to subscribe to the magazine, either in print, online, or on the apps. You can subscribe to the magazine in print or online by visiting aagrapevine.org. You can subscribe to the app by searching for AA Grapevine on the App Store on your phone. You can also purchase Grapevine books, greeting cards, and other items at your local AA office. By doing so, you'll be supporting both Grapevine and your local office. You can also visit the Grapevine online store at aagrapevine.org. The AA Grapevine Carry the Message Project allows you to help us help others by providing magazine subscriptions to those who are incarcerated, hospitalized, living in remote areas, or stuck at home. Visit aagrapevine.org and click on Carry the Message to learn more. We invite you to listen to our other weekly podcast, the AA Grapevine Half Hour Variety Show, which is available for free on all podcast platforms and on aagrapevine.org. Check out our primary purpose, the official podcast of the General Service Office of Alcoholics Anonymous. Tune in to hear how AA's message continues to reach those who need it most. For all podcasts, be sure to subscribe on your favorite streaming platform so you can catch all episodes. Please follow Grapevine on Instagram and YouTube as well. Our second speaker is Dolores, who is a member of the Any Lengths group in Glens Falls, New York.
Hi.
Hi,
Yes.
Dolores.
Okay.
Thank you.
Hi, everybody. Hi, my name is Dolores. I'm an alcoholic. My sober date is 70609. And like you said, my group is the Any Lengths group of Alcoholics Anonymous. I continue to do the things I was told to do when I got here. And so far it's working for me. I got sober at age, I think, 59. And I think that we talk about the gift of desperation. I was speaking to somebody about that the other day. Mine was like, okay, I'm old now. I better get this. And I just figured I'll just follow directions, and that's worked. So when I grew up, as the oldest of, grew up on Long Island. I was the oldest of six kids. Irish Catholic. And what does, I think I just, I always want to have like the saddest story, but I don't. I grew up in a family. It was nice. I went to good schools. Everything was okay. However, I just knew that part of my life, our lives, the family, was drinking. One vivid memory was my parents used to take, my father owned a drugstore in town. So on, New Year's, he would have an open house for customers, whatever. And I thought the greatest thing that he had ever done is they got a fountain that they put in the basement with Manhattans coming out of it. And I was like, oh my God, I didn't know I had arrived, but my family sure had arrived. Anyway, that just sticks in my head. The next day going downstairs and just your feet stuck to everything. But it didn't matter. So anyway, grew up, went to school, blah, blah, blah. What I realized, I had there was always this something inside me, not good enough, a disappointment. Like that rings in my head all the time. Disappointment. Couldn't do anything right. Did anyone say that to me? I don't know. I always blame my mother, but I don't know that that was ever said. It was just this sense I had. I went to my, I hate admitting this, 50th high school reunion, and I'm looking around at people. And what I realized when I had gotten home was I was always a member of the B team. I wanted to be a member of the A team. I wanted to be in the honors class. I was one class down. I wanted to be a cheerleader. I was in stupid pep club for people who didn't make it as a cheerleader. It was always that just, I almost got, oh, almost, but never quite got there, which fed into my disappointment, loser, worthless, which has run through my life. I went to I didn't drink until I was 17 and a half when I went to college because it was against the law. How lame is that? And mommy would be mad at me. So I talk about living a life of fear. When I went to college at 17 and a half, it's like, okay, here we go. And I found my people. I found friends who would go out with me every night, and we partied, and we had so much fun. To this day, we're friends. They're appalled that I'm an alcoholic, and they're not. They're like, how did that happen? It's like, I don't know. It just happened. They stopped. I forgot. So anyway, found my people, went through school. Some 1 year, like I think I got a 0.3 my first semester. And am I going to say it had to do with drinking? I don't know, but that was my grade. And academic probation, you get, it's 1968, 69, so you got, campus, you weren't allowed out of the campus, out of your room after 7:30 or something. So 9 o'clock, the emergency door was right near my dorm room. So out we went, out the emergency door, found some bar, got in, somebody let us in at, midnight, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock. I had an 8 o'clock class. Didn't make that very often. Oh, it was in my major. So, and I went through and there was nothing, that's just what we did. And it was never a big sign or whatever, of anything. The second year of school, the group of us, my roommates and friends, we decided that we needed to like buckle down, not go out so much. So we would go to the library from 6 o'clock to 9 o'clock, go home, back to the dorm, and go out till two. We got our studying in. That we did what college students are supposed to do. We studied. Did my grades raise all that much? I was off academic probation, so that was a plus. I got through college, loved it. I remember my graduation. I limped across the stage because somewhere along the line the night before I had fallen and twisted my ankle, and so what happened? Oh, I don't know. Twisted ankles are going to play, I just realized this, plays a big role in my quest for sobriety. A lot of them. I wish I knew how they happened. So anyway, I get my first job at a school for the deaf and, oh, I found my people there too. Friday afternoons, we all went out, I remember us at one point, having a Halloween party or something with the kids, and we had pumpkins, which we carved with the kids, and put them aside and hid them someplace in the building until they fermented. And then we made something out of it, but that was like, oh, aren't we clever? I left that school for the deaf, and I went to, I still call it a hearing school. I went to a regular public school, terrified because I'm, 29 years old. I had never set foot in a public school before. It's like, how do you behave? I had no idea, So anyway, so I'm a wreck going, but you know what? I found my people. Every Friday afternoon, we're going out, And because the drinking age, I think, was 17, 18 at that point, we were drinking with students. I taught high school. We're drinking with the students and with our principals, And that was all so normal. And I was like, this is the best. When I went to that, when I was hired at that school, I didn't know this term, but when I read it in the big book, I knew this is when it happened. I was a teacher of the deaf speech therapist, and I'm an interpreter for the deaf at that point. And my school district was really, it was wonderful. It was just, we're just high powered, good. With good teachers, that they got from all over the world. What they told me is they had advertised all over the world, and I was chosen. Now, I believed that. I don't know if it happened, but I believed that. I had arrived. The whole world, they searched for somebody, and they chose me. I still like to believe that is what happened, but I don't know that. So anyway, I loved that job. Loved it, loved it. I stayed there for 30 something years with my people. It was there that I found the perfect alcoholic to marry. I searched long and hard for him, evidently, as usually the case, didn't work out well. I remember him coming in one day and he goes, "I don't want to be married anymore. I haven't," this is like 9 years in, he goes, "I haven't loved you for 7 years." I'm like, where was I? I missed all that. Oh, I know, I was probably drinking and saying to myself, this is fine. Isn't this how it should be? I could do that. I always say, you know, I knew how to dance to make you happy. What do you want me to do? I'll be quiet. I'll be funny. I'll be this. I'll be that. And I knew how to do that. I spent my life trying to make other people happy and have everything okay. I could make that happen. I think I found out I can't make that happen. You know, when I retired, people would say, now I was 54 years old, people say, well, what are you going to do? You know, are you going to, I used to teach college too, you're going to go back to college? I go, you have to like show up on Tuesdays and Thursdays. That's annoying. And I loved teaching. Are you going to be a sub? Anyone who's a teacher knows you never want to be a sub. That's just horrible. So no, I'm not going to sub. How about tutoring? Again, got to show up. I had no plans to show up. So my plan, and I would just say this to everyone and think it was absolutely reasonable. What are your retirement plans? I'm going to drink. No one ever said like, that's crazy. So I continued to say it and continued to do it. I would sit in my house, you know, and I would drink. You know, and by that time, my mother had been in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous. I remember thinking, well, that was crazy. She kept relapsing. And that was just crazy to me. Like, why do you want to go and not drink for such a long time and evidently suffer and then drink again? That just makes no sense to me. You know, so why bother? My story until I was probably 12 years sober was, and that's why I never went to Alcoholics Anonymous, because my mother kept relapsing. That was not the truth. And I was at a meeting once, I'm telling that story, and then I go, oh my God, that is not what happened. I didn't want to stop. But easy to blame mom, you know? My sister, there were lots of incidences, you know, that I'm so now look back on, should have been so embarrassed, you know, and maybe I was for a little bit, but that didn't stop me. That didn't stop me from being embarrassed again the next day. I would sit in, I remember one thing, I don't remember this one thing. I was in a blackout evidently. So, but in the morning I woke up, I'm in bed, and which is my house, my bed, which is nice. And something's weird, you know, in my bed. I love stopping there. Something's weird. And it was, I looked down and it's a box of frozen peas. I'm like, why is a box of frozen peas in my bed? You know, they were defrosted at that point. And then I tried to get up and I couldn't walk. My ankle was blown up, and evidently something had happened. And I remember, I think I must have remembered that if you fall, you have a sprain or whatever, take a bag of peas or some kind of vegetables and put them on your that joint. Well, I didn't have a bag evidently, so a box seemed to do the trick. It didn't. The sides are hard. It was not helpful. So now I have to come up with a story about how that happened, you know, because I need somebody to drive me to the doctor and an x-ray, all that stuff. So the story is, I was walking my dog, and where I lived, you walk to the dogs over to like a woods and walk them. And so it was dark. I was walking my dog, and I must have fallen in a hole and twisted my ankle and then got the box of peas and went to bed. Did that happen? I don't know. Usually I say, well, I didn't have a dog, but I did have a dog. But did that happen? Did I fall? Did I don't know. But that sounded reasonable to me. And I told that story for years. I believed that story for years. Often I will get up to tell my story and I go, oh, there was this one time, you know, I was walking my dog and I fell. And I go, oh, wait, that didn't happen. I have convinced myself that happened. And I will buy all my lies. I did the before, I'll do it still. You know, and I have to go, oh, wait, no, that didn't happen. I don't know what happened. Did any of those things make me go, no? But there was something. Well, my younger sister went to Alcoholics Anonymous, and so now she was able to, you know, like ask me questions, so I could be appalled that she asked me. But she goes, that ankle. She goes, did it have anything to do with drinking? And you know the story. No, how could you say that? And so I never said anything had to do with anything with drinking. But in my head, that seed's planted where I sat there and I would, alone in my den, just me and my dog going, hello, I'm Dolores. I'm an alcoholic. Hi, I'm Dolores. I'm an alcoholic. What can I say so that you'll like me, that you'll accept me, that you won't think that I'm stupid or a loser or a disappointment? I had to get that line right so that when I came to this group of alcoholics, they would accept me. Little did I know, I didn't have to qualify. So anyway, I still didn't go to Alcoholics Anonymous. So at the end, I was up at my family's shared summer home where I am right now, 4th of July. We got together and did what we do. We drink. That's all I remember. Next day, my brother-in-law comes to me and he says, Dolores, can I talk to you? Oh, I hate that. You know, your mother says that. The principal says that. I did this to my sister the other day. I said, Patty, can I talk to you? And she was like, what? Now she's 73 and an attorney. She shouldn't be that scared, but was still. So John says, you know, can I talk to you? And he went through your size, your weight, the amount you drink, la, 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 your age. You know, you're not handling your alcohol and you can't take my children away with you anymore. I used to bring my niece and nephew on Aunt Dolores weekends and we traveled to different cities. And I was looked at him, I go, I don't drink when I'm with them. I believe that, but it's a lie. Of course I drank when I was with them. I just didn't drink as much as I wanted to. So anyway, my family evidently had a little talk about all of this when I was doing what I was asleep, passed out. And the next day when they left that day going, Dolores, take care of yourself. We love you. They've never said that in their lives. And they're hugging me. I'm like, what happened that are making them so loving? So I really didn't want to know. So that afternoon, we go down to the dock to have cocktails. And I had, at that point, I don't know if they still have them, little juicy juice boxes of wine. So adorable. So I was drinking them at the time because they were adorable. And I brought four of them, little ones, down to the dock with me. I would drink two. I would share two. I drank four and somebody else's bottle and then went back to my house. And I said to my sister, I finally had enough. I wasn't drunk yet. And I said to my sister, what happened last night that has everybody so crazy, so weird? And she looked at me and we love each other. Tears, here we go. She looked at me and said, I know, you're an a-hole. And I was so taken aback. Now, it wasn't the first time nor the last time I was called that. But for some reason, I really think it was my higher power just flicking me on the head and saying, you know what, you are. I just went, and I saw a gravestone. And on it, he said, Dolores Kennecke, a-hole. That was my legacy. Not wonderful aunt, good sister, nice daughter, good teacher, you know, none of that. It was a-hole. And I just went, I'm done. I'm done. Called my other sister, and the process started. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And the thing that saved my life, I think, when I went to rehab is the doctor's opinion. When I read the doctor's opinion and went, oh my God, I am not a loser. I'm sick. How cool is that? And if you're sick, there's a solution. There's a medicine you could take. And I was all in. I was in from that moment on. That changed my life. And I have followed what they've said all the way along the line. I try very hard to grow in understanding and effectiveness by continuing to study and to grow and to learn new things and to take different service commitments. You know, we want to get in the grapevine thing. I just happen to have many grapevines here in front of me, which I just drop off at people's houses so I feel need them. No, I don't. And my first grapevine gig, my first area gig was Grapevine. And I was the Grapevine area chair. I was so excited about that. I got a sponsee in me. We got a Grapevine outfits for orientation day. And we're walking around in that. Somebody did say, Dolores, what's your service commitment this year? I'm in a Grapevine outfit. I just went, oh, it's archives? And the person never even blinked. And I just kept walking on. Now, that was the beginning of COVID. That was the end of my meeting anybody in the area for 2 years. But we did start the Grapevine Story Hour in Area 48, which still continues. That made my love of Grapevine grow more and more and more. I am a big fan of that. I talk about it a lot. My home group is a Grapevine meeting. We do Grapevine Step of the Month, the Grapevine Traditions of the Month. And, you know, it's a nice casual way to be able to understand the steps and the tradition so that we all understand it. So it's really, I love the Grapevine. I have had the great pleasure of the great, I don't even know what word to use, privilege of being the delegate from my area. And, to be there and watch what happens and to see how Alcoholics Anonymous works with love and inclusion. Well, if there are any other delegates here, I think we all started crying on Friday. I have not stopped because this love of the gift that I was given is overwhelming. When I started in AA, I wanted an AA name so badly, you know, Two Finger Joe, you know, I just wanted a name. And somebody said, well, call you Weepy Dolores. Like, I don't want to be Weepy Dolores. That's ridiculous. Well, I think my name is Weepy Dolores because I haven't stopped crying. And I'm okay with that. You know, this is a, what a gift we were given. And this, to be asked to do this today for, Alcoholics Anonymous and for the Grapevine started me off on my journey. I want to say thank you. Thank you for inviting me. Thank you for being all of you part of my life. It's a good one now. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dolores. You know, I identify with like the waking up in the morning and having bruises, but like, I never left my room. So how did that happen? You know, and when I had to babysit my sister's kids, like I know I would notice that like the whole wine rack was emptied before I, you know, when I was there. So I identified with the family concern and the discussions. At the same time, I identify with the gifts that we get as a result of being present in AA, showing up and doing service. And you mentioned finding your people and finding our people here in Alcoholics Anonymous. So thank you. Please let your friends know about our meeting. This is an open meeting, so it is also ideal for friends who want to learn more about Alcoholics Anonymous. Keep this in mind when doing cooperation with the professional community or public information work. At this time, I'm going to invite our first speaker, Gordon, to close the meeting with the prayer of your choice.
Okay, so I want to thank everybody again for having us, and thank you, Dolores. I guess we'll close with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept things that cannot change, courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference.